another episode of the Nation of Nerd podcast. I am Mark, and with me we got Rico. What's up, man?
What's going on, man? Salutes to the nation, I guess.
Oh, God, this is so nostalgic. I love it. I love this. This is amazing. I miss seeing your green room.
Oh, you see, we're about to change the color of this room. But the
I know, but this, but but the green room, I see the green room, and it looks so Latin that it's amazing because it just reminds me, it reminds me of Rico.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I got the, I mean, you cannot see, I got a bunch of comics on the back. It's a mess over there.
What kind of comics?
I bought a bunch of like old, the Demon, a bunch of Kirby stuff. I went into like a Kirby phase, so I bought like New Gods and
I mean, because you're normally a comiXology guy, so I'm surprised that you actually have physicals.
No, I got a couple of physicals there because I'm, you know, I'm for my daughter. If I give her the tablet, she's just gonna go straight to YouTube. So I gotta buy physical copies, comics that she likes. Now she loves the Teen Titans Go, so I got her those comics.
And nice, nice.
So, but it has to be the physical copy. She cannot do tablet. If I give her the tablet, she's just gonna do something else.
Like Peppa Pig, man. Hey, you never know. She might end up going and looking at all these reactions to Joker, which is actually what we're gonna be talking about.
She got YouTube Kids. They plug all that stuff.
Awesome, man. So yes, we're here. Yes, hopefully we'll get back to one day just talking comics. But we needed to get the band somewhat back together. The Marvelite Leo, or the Marvelous one, whichever one we called him. I don't remember his. He hasn't watched it yet. Hiram hasn't watched it either. Hopefully we can get to a point where we all watch this movie together. But I think this movie has just caused so much in between, you know, the fandom that it was just Rico was like, dude, are we going to do this? Are we going to get the band back together to do this review? And I was like, we need to do this. So for this movie and this review, it's just us, but that's fine. Because I think if we base it on comments, we were the two popular ones anyways. So that's... I don't think that's true. I know you were. I mean, once Rico said he was out because, you know, your wife Addie was going back to school for night school and you had to take care of your daughter, I was like, oh man, you know what, I'm just gonna shut down Nation of Nerd because this show means nothing without Rico. No. So you're in the show, so it's Nation of Nerd, and that's okay. We don't have a Twitter handle, but that's fine too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's it. But I've been planning a comeback for a while, but I just don't know what to do, and sometimes I don't really have time. Like, I don't think I can do like a weekly show every, you know, all the time, but I'll be back once or twice every couple of days or so.
All right, well, when you're ready, let's do this. But in the meantime, yes, the main event, Joker, Warner Brothers. This is the first of hopefully many of, I guess you could say, the DC Black, which is what Todd Phillips was attempting to call. Kind of like these more serious character studies, a little bit darker, well, much darker if you base it on this movie. And I have to say, me personally, it was a win for Warner Brothers. I know I asked you on the chat, what did you think of this movie? And your answer was, I liked it, Addie loved it. So what were your thoughts going into the movie theater? What were your expectations, and what did you come out with the film?
Well, you know, there was a lot of the press was running wild with, you know, Joker headlines and, you know, disturbing, you know, throwing words like that. Like, you know, he's a problematic character, and, you know, that people were walking out. So for some reason, I bought into the hype, and I was like, wow, I guess is this like a slasher film now? I went with that mentality, but then I was like, you know, maybe Joker is doing some dark stuff, maybe he's killing kids, I don't know. So I went with that mentality, and then when the movie started, and, you know, I went through the whole Joker journey,
Yeah.
I was like, I don't see why people are walking out. I mean, there is violence, but it's not a violent movie. You know, it's not a people getting shot every 5 minutes or people getting stabbed, and you know, there's no gore or nothing like that. So I don't know why people were doing all this drama about it. But I did enjoy the movie. I wasn't expecting to be that long though. I didn't check the running time. I just went. but I did like it. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. The film was 2 hours and 2 minutes, including the after, like the credits. So I guess you could say the movie was about like 1 hour 50. Me personally, going into the film, I mean, I was hyped. I mean, I think I've been posting this since the very beginning. This was the one movie, my highly anticipated movie. And I said this like after Aquaman, like, all right, Aquaman's done. I could finally, and everybody's posting, what's your movie? Endgame, Captain Marvel, Shazam, Far From Home. I'm like, no, man, Joker. And that happened immediately when I found out, not really because of Todd Phillips. If anything, Todd Phillips was my worry, like my one concern.
Yeah.
It was once I saw Joaquin Phoenix. And when I saw that he was going to be, I was like, dude, no, this is... We got, like, the next best thing besides, like, in terms of, even though he doesn't consider himself a method actor, because he can kind of, like, switch that off when the cameras are off. I mean, I got, like, it's like a Daniel Day-Lewis and then Joaquin Phoenix. Like, those are, like, the guys when I think of that upper echelon of, like, serious movie actor kind of thing that takes their roles too serious and they, you know, and they go to that next level. So I was 100% for it. Now, I will say, I am a person that, I mean, I know that they always talked about that this movie has a lot of Taxi Driver and a lot of King of Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't seen those movies in a long time. And I didn't see them before this film because I didn't want to see the similarities.
Gotcha.
I wanted to experience this movie for what it was. And I have to say, this film was, oh, okay, so this is exactly how the movie's starting. I'm like, okay, so there is just, you're 100% learning, you know, getting into this character. And halfway through, I mean, I even kind of like covered my eyes a couple of times. And not because I thought it was scary, because the movie was making me feel a certain way that I'm very rarely uncomfortable watching a film. But because of the way that the film, I mean, the score is just amazing, that I don't know. I felt uneasy, and I think that the movie succeeded because although I'm feeling like, oh, God, this is a little much, that's exactly like what it was supposed to do. And I loved it. And I thought that this film was, oh, man, it's one of those things that, I mean, you know what, we'll get to that part after. In regards to like comparisons, because I know everyone's doing like a comparison and just kind of like what you think of this portrayal compared to all the other Joker portrayals that you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But let's jump into the beginning. What were your thoughts of Joaquin Phoenix, like as Arthur Fleck, and his, you know, his ascent to becoming Joker?
Man, this is gonna sound stupid, but I didn't know, even though the name of the movie is Joker, I didn't know that it was really going to be 2 hours of just Joker. You know, he really carries the whole film. And
I think he's in every scene.
Exactly, because he's old Joker and just, you know, it's his world, which is one of the things that I didn't like. But this guy put up a masterclass on acting. Man, the guy he lost a bunch of weight. You know, he had the face that you can feel, you know, communicating with the eyes that he is, you know, depressed, that he's just not having a good time at all in this world. And for sometimes you even feel a little sad because, you know, he has mental problems, and you know, you can see that the mom is just an enabler, and the social worker doesn't really care for him. And, you know, he's living in, you know, it's kind of like inspired on New York's 80s. You know, they talk about the garbage strike You know, it's kind of like the, you know, it's not implied on the movie, but it looks like New York during the crack era. You know, everything is really going to hell in the whole city. So, and he's just trying to make money, and he's just, you know, he's just trying to make people laugh, like he says. So, you know, he feels, when I see him, like, oh man, that guy is carrying a really heavy weight. And, you know, a ticking time bomb. And he really played that ticking time bomb really, really well. Like, for a full hour, you're just waiting to see, you know, the turning point. You know, what's going to happen that is going to push
him. So talking about that turning point, do you think that, because that's actually one of the scenes where, yes, you see the moment where he got the gun from, I believe it was Randall, and he got the gun, and then he's at the little kid hospital, and he's dancing, just trying to make these kids laugh. The gun falls off. Randall leaves him, lets him hanging, throws him under the bus. He gets fired. And then it's at the first moment at, like, the subway. And this is kind of like when, I guess you could say, the violence, if you will, begins. And this is in regards to three guys that are clearly, they're wasted on something. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of harassing this lady that's sitting there. Now, what we've noticed is, and I mean, for those who have been watching and listening to a lot of interviews that Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips have been doing, they've been talking about this video that was, like, posted on YouTube like 4 years ago about a guy that has this laughing disorder, where depending on where he is attitude-wise or how he feels, he just uncontrollably starts laughing, and to the point where even his throat is hurting. Did you see that video?
No. So it's about a real person with that?
Yeah, like Joaquin Phoenix was researching and looking at the video, and if you put on YouTube, like, laughing disorder, you're going to see a guy, this white dude, sitting in a car, and you just see him, like, he's like, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. And then he just starts laughing. And the whole thing where he's laughing so hard that his throat hurts, kind of like what you see Joaquin Phoenix doing, where he's, like, holding his throat because his throat hurts because of how much he's laughing, that it hurts. Wow. So I was like, oh my gosh, he played that perfectly. Like, he played the guy in the car in that YouTube video to a T. So, and you see it, that they actually express it in when he's actually making that child laugh that you see in the trailer. He shows that lady a card and saying, like, no, I don't think this is funny. I just have a disorder that when I am in an uncomfortable situation, or, you know, it overtakes me. And that's something where, I mean, his entire life, you think he's laughing, but in reality, he's just a tortured soul. So that moment actually brought what you're talking about, that turning point, which mm-hmm. is, yes, he got fired. He still has that gun. But now he's getting picked on by those three guys in the subway, and he actually gets punched in the face. Now, this is a movie that was saying, depending on how you were mentioning it on the media, that this movie was kind of like glorifying violence, depending on who was doing the headline. Glorifying violence. And they talk about the, you know, the times that there was deaths and the Joker actually killed someone. Well, I mean, if we're basing it on Jokers that we've seen in past iterations, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, Jack Nicholson killed about 50. Heath Ledger killed about, like, 20-something. Like, there has been killings, and the Joker has been a part of it. This one, I mean, at least at the start, the first two guys that he killed from self-defense.
Yeah.
If you think of it, because those guys, I mean, they were beating him up and kicking him. So, yeah, he took that gun, and he shot him. I think the turning point was the last one, because that's when the guy that was trying to escape the train, and they were trying to see, like, okay, who's going to get out of the train? Are you going to get out so I stay in so I can leave? And you see him, like, dragging himself, and he's just filled with blood.
That was like premeditated, or however you say that.
Premeditated. Like, he was on a mission. Like, it was no longer a self-defense. This was kind of like, I'm not going to take it anymore. And that moment, I have to say, the tension that was there, because this is what I mean when it starts to be kind of like uncomfortable. It's those moments where you're like, dude, those guys 100% deserve it. But I feel really weird cheering Arthur on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's weird, but that's the point. That's the point of, I think, like, what this movie was trying to do. It's not glorifying anything because, honestly, it really depends on who you're watching the movie with. Luckily, I watch the movie with all the old people. I go at Friday at 10 a.m. in the morning because I don't want to see with any freaking kid that's probably too immature that are going to be talking and they're going to be on their phones or something. I don't need that. I'm going to see this with grown-ups. So I go 10 a.m. and, you know, that's just my prerogative. I just enjoy that. And
I think, you know what? I think it's because when people think comic book movies, they think Marvel, you know. And you go from, you know, watching the Avengers fight aliens to this guy in a subway with a 38 special shooting people. Like, it looks, it's just too close to reality, you know.
And I know that felt very real.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, in the 80s, there was actually a subway killer in New York. So, you know, when people see the Joker, it's like, oh, that's something that can really happen. Plus, yeah. You know, when you, the Aurora shooting, and people already have this image about the Joker that, oh, you know, he later went crazy when he was portraying the Joker, and then the shooting happened, and so people came with all this baggage way before, you know, this movie. So that's why, I mean, and it is a minority. It's not everybody that is thinking that way.
It's just the minority is very vocal.
He's very vocal, exactly. So
yeah,
and the thing about that sentiment is that, you know, you come already with either, oh, I'm going to hate this movie no matter what, and I'm going to find out every plot hole, every little thing that I don't like, and I'm just going to put a magnifying glass on that thing. Or if you, you know, are a fan, then you're going to think that is, you know, this is the greatest movie of all time, you know, because I've seen some people saying stuff like that, like, listen, it's good, but you got to relax a little bit with that.
So we witnessed the killing,
mm-hmm.
and this is when you see Joker, Arthur, because he's not Joker yet, Arthur runs away. Mm-hmm. You see him run away, and he goes to this abandoned, like, bathroom with the flickering light, and this is when I think the movie began, like, its first turn.
Mm-hmm.
And that first turn was, we see in this movie how important music is to Arthur. And it means a lot to him and his movements. And one of my favorite things is, now that I've seen the movie, this is actually was all like ad-libbed. This was not in the script.
Oh, the dance was like a freestyle?
The dance. Yes, this was the director. He's like, now if you go on YouTube, the director, he's actually has like a little interview, like behind the making of a scene. And he is talking about this one where the movie, what the actual part in the script was supposed to be, he was going to run to the bathroom and he was going to try to shoot himself. But there were no more bullets. So then he was trying to hide the gun and wipe the clown paint off his face. And then while the paint is like dripping off his face, he starts doing what he does that you've seen in the movie, kind of like talking to himself. And in a way, like, oh, he's starting to go a little crazy because he's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm always been trying to be a comedian and I heard you like jokes. And that's what the it was supposed to be. But when Joaquin Phoenix got there and Todd Phillips, he's like, you know what? I don't really think that this is right. Because why would Arthur try to hide his gun when he's not ashamed that he killed them? So what happened is that Todd Phillips actually from Hilder, I'm not even going to try to pronounce her last name, but Hilder, who did the score, the composer. She sent a piece, just a snippet of what her score was going to be. And it was only Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix inside the bathroom. The rest of the cast and the lighting directors and everything, they were outside. And what happened is he goes, why don't we check out the song and see what happens? And he played the song of what you hear in the bathroom, and Joaquin Phoenix just started to dance. So what he was feeling at that moment is exactly what they used in the film. And that was the director actually holding the camera. So it was just them two in the bathroom. That's why the lighting looks dark. It's the flickered light. It's just its natural light. The rest of the movie, if you kind of see it, it looks very stylized because they went like digital instead of film. But yeah. That's like one of the few moments that it actually looked raw. And it's because that moment was raw. And that was just him purely acting in the moment. And I think that that was kind of like one of those moments I was like, it's very goosebump because you're starting to see the ascent to getting to Joker. And yeah. It was like, oof, man. And it's powerful, and it's like, it's sad. And that's the thing. This movie gets me going all over the places. Cause I gotta say, from there, you kind of start to see, well, even a little bit before that, we get introduced to, man, I don't even know her name, but Zazie Beetz' character.
Sophia.
Okay, so Sophia. And with her character, you're kind of seeing, okay, she gets introduced to Arthur. They meet on the elevator. She kind of does like a little hand gesture. And it looks like, you know, she's kind of like connecting with Arthur. And it looked like that's all that he needed. Because there, I would say that the... to me, what I was saying was the weakest part of the movie actually had the biggest swerve, which was their relationship. Because that relationship grew very fast. Very, very, very fast. Yeah,
and you know what's funny about that relationship? While it was developing, that we were sitting down next to these two ladies, and she was saying, there's no way that girl will go out with him. And everybody was laughing. And, you know, hey, it's actually true. Like, you know.
But
back on that scene on the bathroom after you know, he killed the three Wall Street guys, that scene to me was intense because, like, you know, I have seen a lot of documentaries about serial killers and stuff like that. And, you know, after they kill, you know, they feel this, you know, like, all relaxed. And like really, you know, like it's what they say, you know, the expert, it's just like, you know, kind of like a sexual release. Like, you know, like when you have an orgasm, like you're like, and yeah. that's how you felt to me. It's like, yo, this guy is really relaxed. Like, oh, I finally did it. I finally crossed the line. And, you know, that kind of like give him confidence, which that's why that scene to me, compared to the violent ones, that one was the one that. Like to me, it felt like a little scary. Like, holy shit! Now it's
yeah. I hear you, and I didn't even think of it that way.
Yeah.
And so then we're getting later on into the movie, and Joker, this is one of the scenes that I felt like things started getting really, like, whoa, what's happening here? Which is, we see that Arthur has, you know, is very loving and very caring towards his mother. His mother, as you mentioned before, is an enabler, and she has been pleading and saying that Thomas Wayne is going to help us. And you can see that she's not all there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell that, but you could also think, you know, maybe she's just sick and she's getting, you know, maybe to her later days, because Arthur looks like a guy that is maybe in his 40s. So the mom might be in her 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not all there. And she keeps on saying, Thomas is going to help us. We're family. Thomas is going to help us. He can't. He always says on TV he's going to help, and that everyone in Gotham is family to him. And Arthur is not buying it. If anything, it's just getting him more upset little by little, because he sees actually what's going on in the streets. Now, with him actually being in the streets, when his mom has one letter and she's getting ready to go to bed, she leaves a letter there that she asks Arthur to end up like going out to send. And that is when he decides to actually open the letter and see what was revealed, which was that he is actually Thomas Wayne's son. Did you buy that? Did you buy that at any moment?
Ben, you know what? I was so kind of like, you know, when this is what happens to me when I watch wrestling, I just suspend all disbelief and just enjoy the ride. And when I was watching this movie, in my mind, I was like, the nerds are going to be mad if this is the, because for some reason, I believe her mom when she said, you know, on that letter that he was Thomas' son. I was like, oh.
Now, with me as well, I am somebody that when I am in the movie, I am 100% in the movie. I don't see movies critically. I usually, like, in a critical eye at all, because I want to be immersed. I don't want to see it as, like, a critic, because I'm not. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
And I just so happened to podcast.
Also, the first time that you watch the movie, you should, you know, just enjoy the ride, you know?
Exactly. So that happens with me. And the thing is, normally, because I know that Leo always used to make fun of me, is because I'm just somebody that when I watch a movie, I love to think about it later.
Yeah.
And once I watch a movie, I think about it. And I even like put on the soundtracks because I love to listen to the music to remember those scenes in the movie that I've seen. That's when I listen to interviews only by like the director and stuff, because I want to see if there were any, you know, like those nice little tricks that, you know, movie people, they know how to do.
Yeah.
And for example, like that's how I found out about the bathroom scene. So those things always elevate the movie to me, and it makes me now think and process what I saw. But man, when I saw it, I mean, again, these are Elseworlds. This is not the true story of who the Joker is. This is not comic book canon. Mm-hmm. Again, we're talking about the Joker. We don't even know, and we'll get to that later. Is this story even real? We don't know. Because again, every origin that the Joker has said in the comics have always been lies.
Exactly.
Look at, if you're watching The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger says, "You want to know how I got these scars?" And he had like four different stories. Because none of them are true. He's just a master manipulator. So, I mean, for all that we know, this entire movie could have been him manipulating the audience. And that's just the joke, you know?
And that's one of the theories when he's discovered that some of the scenes that we have seen are not actually real. You know, it makes you think, what happened, what did not happen, you know?
Yes. So, in regards to that, that is when now Arthur wants answers from his mom. The mom is now scared, and she reluctantly tells Arthur. So what does Arthur do? Arthur is now on a mission because he wants to meet his brother. like his brother-in-law, like his stepbrother or whatever they're called. And that moment was very creepy. I do love the fact that it's very Bruce, where he's a brooding kid and doesn't smile at all, even when Arthur's trying to make him smile. He's just brooding. Like, it's perfect Batman Joker, yes. You know? Like, it felt very Batman Joker, because this kid's just not smiling at all. But since this movie was so real, the moments that you see Arthur following, what did you say her name was? Sophia? Like, on the train?
Yes.
And he's got the hood. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just experiencing, I just feel like something really bad's going to happen. Like, really weird, that's going to make you feel ugh inside.
Yeah.
I felt, when I see this guy grab Bruce's mouth and make the smile, I'm like, dude, this guy's a random stranger just straight up sticking his thumbs in your mouth, making you smile. You know, like seeing the introduction of like Alfred going in there, like they were nice. Like those were the nice little subtle nods, like, oh man, look, we're kind of getting a glimpse of the Bat family. Mm-hmm. And those were nice. But man, I was feeling like these are those moments that I would actually kind of. As if I was watching, like, The Conjuring. And I know a demon's going to pop out sooner or later. But I was, like, that's how I felt watching this, just because of how tense it was. And because of how intense Joaquin was playing Arthur. I was like, God, I don't know what he's going to do. You know exactly. What I mean?
And that scene is after, you know, like, he's being push. So this is on the period of the movie that you are like, okay, he already killed three people. You know, mm-hmm. he's about to blow up at even more now, you know, take it to the
next level. And then he ends up, so now there's a movement going on of the people of Gotham who are, you know, these are all of the people who have been pushed aside, who have been ignored, who have been shut down, and they're getting to that point where they're no longer going to take what's been happening, what the government, what the rich have done. And in that moment, Arthur is feeling more like himself, and that's when he actually was able to, you know, break into like the theater and actually confront Thomas Wayne. And this moment was, oof, it was tense, because here he is. He's like, "Hey, Dad, like, I just wanted a hug. You think I don't want anything from you?" And I'm like, "Oh God, like, this is weird." And then he's like, "This is not true. Your mother's a mentally unstable. You were adopted. You're not even really." And I was like, "Oh my God, like." I don't know why, but I was feeling bad for him. Like, dude, this guy can't catch a break. He can't catch a break. And now, you know, he's realized this guy, like, oh, wow, you might just be my dad. To the point where he's like, you're not even Peggy Fleck, or you're not even really her son. Yeah, you're adopted.
That was a big blow to him.
Yeah, and that was huge. Because then that's the point when he gets back to the house. The mom has now been questioned by detectives, and she has been rushed to the hospital. He gets a phone call when he's home, and it's actually because when he went on a date with Sophie, he went on a stand-up comedy. Because, again, all he wants to do is put people smile on people's faces. Well, he completely bombed. But, I mean, you wouldn't know it, because when you're watching the video, it's, of course, he starts having his laughing disorder. It started. But then after, you're kind of hearing, like, crowds cheering until he's in the hospital and he sees that somebody that he's always looked up to, which was Murray Franklin, he mm-hmm. actually mocked him. And now he's home and gets a call saying, hey, we've gotten such a great response from your video. We want you to join. What do you think about joining? And I'm like, oh, man, this is when it's going to happen. And that's honestly when I felt that we officially got him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's when he became, and that's when the movie completely turned. Because you see him now practicing his walk when he's on the show. And he's talking about the speech, and it looked like his entire plan was to kill himself on live TV after he says his you know what he wanted to say, and I'm like, man, this is gonna get nuts. He gets introduced to, I think actually before that even happened, I think before even the phone call was, this is when we realized, okay, we've seen the moment with Arthur and Murray at the beginning of the movie when it looked like he joined the show and he was like, oh, man, you know, you're just a great person. And I wish if I had a son, it was like you. But you find out, you know, that's a lie. You know, that's not really happening. That's just in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it's after the rain. And this is when he's coming back home. And he already killed his mom. He killed his mom once he found out the truth, because that moment inside Arkham Asylum was really, that was tough. That was tough to watch.
Yeah, man. Because at that point, we don't know if Thomas was lying when he told him, you know. I mean, not Thomas, the Alfred.
Yes.
We don't know if they're lying. So when you go to Arkham and he sees paperwork that everything that he's been told is actually true. Like, he's adopted and he was abused when he was a kid. And that's why he has that laughing disorder, because, you know, I guess there was some trauma in his head that he got, hit with something.
Well, the thing is that was always hard is that while he was being abused, because his mother was just so out of it, was that, you know, that I think they even mentioned that they put him next to, like, the draw, you know, like back in the day, especially up north.
Yeah, the radiator.
You have like the radiator, like the heat. Those things aren't coming from the air conditioning. They're coming from, like, these metal tubes that are connected to next to a wall. Super dangerous. I don't know how that ever passed code. But anyways, that's just how it was back then. And they would have him there, but because he was always in pain and he had a laughing disorder, they always thought that he was just a happy kid because he was laughing. But he wasn't laughing. It was just the situation that he was in. So he's just constantly being tortured, and she just thinks that it's perfectly fine. And that's when he realized, like, you're the reason why I am the way I am. And once he killed her, I was like, oh.
Yo, I didn't saw that coming.
Because I didn't either.
Because
even though he knew that he lied, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, and because since the beginning of the movie, you can tell that he's just a mama's boy. And then he and the way that he kill his mom, it was very, very, like, personal, very, like, you know, I'm just gonna put a pillow over your head, and right here in the hospital,
yeah,
like, you know, and he had enough. I have to do it right now.
Yeah, and he walks home, and it's in the rain, and you see him walk into Sophie's room, into Sophie's apartment. I don't know what frame of mind he was in, so I was like, oh god, the way it was, just them showing him, like, just feeling on the daughter's paintings. and now he's just sitting on the couch. I was expecting, although she will get scared, I was expecting she would be there for him to try to be like that last line of defense. I did not buy for one second that once I saw, she's like, oh my God. She's like, what are you doing here? Your name is Arthur, right? We met on the elevator. I was like, oh my gosh, everything I just saw with them was a lie. That was all in his mind. And that, but dude, that was such a great twist. And it could have been maybe when I saw it, I was like, you know what? I can kind of see like, okay, maybe it's just because I was so into the story, how maybe I just let this fly over my head. But that's when I started questioning everything. Dude, what am I seeing that's real? Because I had no idea anymore. I didn't know what was real in this, in the film, once I found out that massive twist between him and Sophie. And now he's getting ready. You see him, he's getting ready to go on to the Murray Franklin show. And then his two buddies came by because they heard about the mom. He got questioned by two detectives.
Yeah.
And now it looks like detectives are going to where he used to work, and now they're asking questions. And you have his friend, the little guy, and Randall, the guy that gave him the gun that ended up throwing him under the bus. He's like, yeah, you know, hey, we're really sad. And then we get to the most violent part of this movie, in my opinion, which was, first, Arthur looked really creepy with just the white makeup.
Yes.
Dude, that was like Ragdoll from Secret Six, if I can think of any interpretation. He looked just like Ragdoll. And it was really creepy the way that he was like contorting his body. But the way that he killed him with the scissors and just smashing his head, I thought that was absolutely brutal.
Now, let me ask you something. Because, you know, at that point, we know that Joker is, you know, he has hallucinated some parts of the movie. Do you think that he bought the gun from Randall, or did the of that scene that Randall gives him the gun because he said, "Hey, you need to protect yourself"? Do you think that one was real? Because you know Randall told the boss that he bought the gun from him. You know,
honestly, I think that there's with Randall, I feel like there's a lot of untold story with their relationship, because even the way he gave him the gun and he's like, you know, you're my boy, don't worry, you can owe me one, like something like that. It kind of felt like, since he was like that big guy, that I think that he was probably taking advantage more of Arthur than what was let on. And I think that's why it was so personal the way that he killed him, and he killed him so brutally. Is because I think that there's more to that relationship, but it, you know, there's only so much you can say with the movie. But I feel that there was, you know, some really uncomfortable stuff that they probably, even though the movie's rated R, they didn't want to go that route.
Yeah, and that's one of my problems with the movie, that there's some stuff that either they go to the next step too fast, that they hide some stuff. You know, but like you said, we're not going to make this movie a 3-hour or a miniseries, you know?
Yeah. Like, I'm okay with leaving things to open to conversation, because I think that's what makes the movie very artsy. And I like that. I like movies that are just open into interpretation, where 10 different people can see something and they think something differently. I like that about the movies. I don't need everything spoon-fed to me.
Yeah.
So once he kills Randall, I thought that this was those subtle, funny moments where he clearly locked to the top of the door, where he's like, I'm not gonna do anything to you. Like, go ahead, you can leave. And the little guy, he just couldn't go. He couldn't reach the door. Those are like those subtle in a really tense moment, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, a lot of directors use that. I don't know what to call it. If it's a trope, you know, after a crazy, violent or scary scene, just give you a little laugh to ease you into the, you know, kind of like,
yeah,
a transition.
But it was still scary though, because you didn't know what he was actually going to do. Like, did he lock it on purpose because he was actually going to kill him, or like, you still didn't know because of how erratic he was.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, he is a psycho, but
yeah,
the people that he kills is because he feels that, you know, kind of like revenge, like, oh, you did something to me and I have to kill you. with the little guy. I forgot his name. He was like, you were always nice to me, so I'm not gonna
see. Sometimes to me, I don't even know if that was real. Because I feel like, because the thing is that it feels like everything that was good that happened to Arthur, was the fake moment with Murray, with the parts with Sophia, it seemed like whatever was good was kind of fake. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if maybe Randall was really the only guy there, but because that guy was always like a positive influence while Randall was kind of like picking on him, it's like he was kind of like just there, but he wasn't really there. Sometimes, like, I don't know, but that's kind of like where I'm just putting my head in, like, as a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Because there he goes, he kills him, he lets the little guy go, and now he's ready. And then you get the music. I actually thought it was really, I had no idea the backstory of the movie being by the guy who's, like, a pedophile. That they were playing the movie,
From a pedophile. And the song, the Rock and Roll Part 2.
Yeah, I actually thought it was for that time in the 80s, and it's really big into, like, the sporting events and stuff like that. Like, this was the main event for Arthur and, like, his story. And I thought that with him, I thought the dancing and stuff, I actually thought it was, like, really good music. Like, it was very clever. I mean, I didn't know the backstory. I guess putting that because of the background. I mean, but we also gave 4 Academy Awards to Bryan Singer, and that guy was a pedophile and sexually assaulted everybody for Bohemian Rhapsody. So, I mean, and that movie won 4 awards. I mean, let's pick our battles. I'm not saying,
yeah,
like, hey, shame on you for that, but, I mean, people still play Michael Jackson songs, and that recent documentary can make people question, even if it's real or not. I mean, you can at least question where it's at least uncomfortable. So...
R. Kelly still got fans, so it's crazy.
I mean, even with the R. Kelly stuff, even in Shazam, you have Shazam doing "I Believe I Could Fly" when he's trying to fly. I mean, I think that whatever. I mean, anyways, I'm not going to get into the whole, because then I sound like a DC apologist, which sometimes I feel like I am sometimes. anyways, so yes, he's now at the Murray Franklin show. I thought this moment was really... Oh, no. The detectives, they chase. They chase him, and you get the train scene, which was, I believe, was that the first time you actually kind of really saw Joaquin Phoenix, like, behind... You know, the set pictures was always in the train station, right? When he was leaving? I think people saw the set photos before that little teaser video that they did.
Now I remember what you said, because it was always on the subway or outside the, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think, like, that's the first thing you see. I'm like, oh, man, okay, we're finally getting to this moment. And I get it now, because the two detectives, they clearly know something is going on. They're now chasing Arthur, because things have gotten way too sketchy. Now, they're chasing him.
Did you ever thought that one of those detectives was going to be Gordon? Were you waiting for that? Because for a second I was like, if one of these people is Gordon, and what is the name of the other, the fat guy?
Harvey Bullock?
Yes, Harvey Bullock. In my mind, I was like, I think that's them. I mean, but I don't think they ever revealed their names. I don't remember.
I don't remember, but I'm kind of happy they're not, because they were kind of like idiots. Like, they were really bad detectives. So yes. I'm trying not to think that Gordon and Harvey would be that bad at their job. But anyways, they get to that subway, and this was, of course, the day of them, like, the clowns doing, like, a protest. And they see that clown, the mysterious clown who murdered the 3 Wall Street guys, as, like, a sign. And they've kind of started using his face as, like, you know, a signal in regards to somebody to follow. And they're kind of like he's kind of like the savior. So he gets to the Murray show after being able to escape them, and I thought that scene was done really well. And man, I was really wondering if we were going to get kind of like Dark Knight Returns. I mean, I've been teasing it. I posted it on Twitter. I'm like, dude, this is going to happen. I know he's going to kill him. He has to. Like, it started with, in a way, he saw Murray as the father figure. He had a mom. The mom already lied and betrayed him, and mm-hmm. he killed him, and he killed her. And now he's got the father figure who he thought was like, you know, I love you, and if I had a son, I would, you know, be there for you too. But then when he actually sees reality, he's being mocked by the person that he's thought of, the, you know, the highest. And I don't know, man, when I saw him get on the scene and One of my favorite moments looking at the trailer is that one moment when you actually see Joker and he's like smoking and it looks like he's pondering like a thought. Do you know what moment I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like if you see like the trailer and he's just like smoking and in this moment he's actually right there next to the screen. I mean behind the curtain. And that's when he hears them actually saying, well, doctor, if there's anybody that's going to need a doctor, it's going to be the next guy. And he's like, play that video again. And they're showing the audio of everybody laughing at him. And he's just thinking. And the music starts having like this pulse. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is going to happen? And, you know, you see how he enters the stage. I'm like, wow, look at this guy with like this charisma. You've never seen this. And I don't know, man. I felt that whole entire conversation was really uncomfortable. Before he even got to the message that he was going to say when he admitted that he killed the guys, him saying, like, the jokes and pulling the notebook, and I was just waiting for something to crack.
And yeah, and it is uncomfortable because you know his state of mind, and you know what's going to happen. Like, you know that somebody's going to get shot. And, you know, and this guy, Murray, like, he doesn't know that he has a gun. And he started pushing him and pushing him when, you know, after he says, you know, I was the guy who killed the three.
Yeah, he was thinking for TV. Mm-hmm. Like, I have perfect TV. Like, I'm going to make millions, like, everybody, because I got the scoop. I have the killer.
Yeah, and you know, it's about Murray, because it reminded me when Howard Stern used to have these people on his show and he made fun of them. Like, he used to have, like, mm-hmm. little people and people with, you know, some type of development issues or whatever. And, you know, he kind of, yep. like, make fun of them. It reminded me of that. And, you know, and that's pretty much how the internet is now. Like, you found a video of, I don't know, somebody falling and you put it on Twitter and everybody's laughing. So it's similar like that. Now, the difference is in this case, the butt of the joke is about to, you know, retaliate.
Yes. And honestly, when you see him finally revealing and he's opening up about all the struggles and he's like, you have no idea. And you know what? Thomas Wayne, I bet, doesn't even think about what it's like to be someone like me. And I think that once he hears from like Murray saying, this just sounds like a whole bunch. Are you done with your pity party? Like just a whole bunch of pity for the horrible things. I think like that's when he snapped. And I think that's when he decided that he wasn't going to do it to himself. I think that's when he was going to kill Murray. So then when he goes, well, how about another joke? And he's like, well, we're done with the jokes. He's like, well, what do you call a mentally ill like loner who gets what do you get when you cross a mentally ill loner and you just leave them on the floor like trash? And he's like, you get what you mother bleeping deserve. And he shoots him. That right there, I actually jumped.
Me too. Everybody in the theater were like, whoa.
I jumped because of how real it felt. It's not like the other when you see like a John Wick or, you know, any other movie with the gun where it's like, and it looks very stylized, like, oh man, this is like really stylized, like cool shooting. No, this felt really real. Like if I actually witnessed an assassination.
Yeah.
Where it felt like, oh, and then just seeing how, you're seeing how angry he is. And then he's like, and he just, it feels like he doesn't know he's composing himself from what he just did and kind of just dances. And then he goes to the camera, which is a very Joker thing as what we've seen like in the movies.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, man. It was nuts because then you see him in the cop car and you see him actually looking outside and seeing all the chaos that he's been doing. And
that's that to me, again, that's what's scary about the Joker on this movie. Like, I don't have a plan. I just want to kill this person. I'm going to kill it. And if they caught me, then they caught me. Like, you know, there's no escape plan. It's 100% all emotional, you know, how he feels, and he does that, you know, crazy shit. And then what's scary is that, you know, in the city, people are so desperate for change and desperate for having a leader that they just, some of them see this guy. Oh, he killed a couple of people, rich kids on the subway. Ah, yeah, he's our guy now, you know.
That's, yeah. So you actually see him in the cop car, and he's saying, like, hey, listen, this is, look at you smiling over there when you're the reason all this is happening. He's like, I know, isn't it beautiful? And then he gets hit by a semi, mm-hmm. and the cops are dead. He gets pulled out, like, kind of like a messiah, kind of, gets laid down. He wakes up, and he sees all these people celebrating. He kind of dances, turns around, and he realizes that he has some blood. And, I mean, that moment, it's one of those things, like, man, this is not good in society, but this moment is really cool. As, like, a comic book fan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That moment when he put the blood smile on his face, I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, mad. This is, like, art. This is, like, a masterpiece, what I just witnessed, especially this whole scene. But the thing is, like, then you see him turn around and he's just embracing and it kind of fades off. The thing to me is, I don't think that any of that was real.
I think the ending with the rescue and the people, like,
yes, yeah. I see. The thing is that I think that he was actually stuck in that cop car. And I think that the rest was him actually just picturing, kind of like he did something, because that's like a good thing that happened. And I think with the music, the song that was being played was called White Room. And if you think about it, right after that moment, it went to the White Room with him in that penitentiary.
You know what?
You know what?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because...
So it's like, to me, I think that he's just like fantasizing all of that. Mm-hmm. And fantasizing, like, even with these riots that were happening, we happen to see the Waynes coming out and they go into the alley. And that's when they get shot, and it's not by, like, a Joe Chill. It's shot by someone with a clown mask, and they witness the murder. But he's kind of like, oh, I'm just thinking of a joke when he's there with the psychiatrist. And what's he thinking about? He's thinking about Bruce Wayne dead with the parents. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it felt like too, like, that was kind of like a little comic booky moment. But I don't know if that part's real. Because even when he says, like, you know, I'm just thinking of a joke, she's like, well, what is it? He's like, you wouldn't get it. I think it's just one of those moments that I don't know what in this movie, after I saw that, I feel like this movie could have been completely him in his head the entire time. And he was just witnessing what could have been.
It could be. And like you said, they'll probably, I mean, I hope the director just never answers that question, because now I don't like this trend of directors just explaining their films again and again and again to people every time that they do an interview. You know, like Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi, he keeps explaining stuff and, you know, like, shut up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I would say that has been a big trend. And I do believe that, I mean, Todd Phillips says that he is planning on maybe, like, in a couple of years, like, revealing some of the theories that people have had and said, like, which one was true. I hope he doesn't, though, because I think that one of the reasons why I love, like, a Christopher Nolan and his films are all his movies end so mysteriously that you don't know what the story, what the ending actually is. And he's like, that's good. It's for you to decide what the ending is. And I love that. So I kind of hope, and that leads me to the question before we end up hanging up here, which is, do you want a sequel? Do you want, because, I mean, Joaquin Phoenix in an interview has said that he has spoken with Todd in regards to, he's never considered the Joker to be a dream role, but he can't stop thinking about what a great time he had and what he could accomplish with his character. I don't know if he's saying that just because of, you know, hey, this, let's get the people running and, oh man, let's try to get sequel talk, you know, more money. I don't know if it's that. Or did Joaquin, because he's not a guy that loves to do franchises, is this a role that he would actually be willing to go? So would you want to have another story? Like, would you like to see Arthur's story continue for another film?
No, not really. I don't need a Joker sequel unless Batman is involved. That's how I feel. Now, would I like another, you know, villain one-shot movie? Definitely.
Yes. Oh, well, that definitely. I want this Black Label, DC Black, whatever their people are calling it. I want this. Like, I want my Lex Luthor movie. Like, I want my President Lex Luthor.
I wouldn't mind a Lex Luthor movie. What I would like to see is a horror movie on the DC Universe. Maybe I'll John Constantine will be, you know, like a true Hellblazer movie, because that's the name that everybody knows. And with Constantine, you can build up to maybe have two or three movies, you know, dealing with maybe Satana, Swamp Thing, Dead Man, or Etrigan. Maybe you can, you know, navigate and but start with Constantine, because everybody loves him, everybody knows him already. He had a movie before, so it's not an unknown character. I don't know, probably.
For sure.
I guess,
but you're open to seeing more of these kind of films.
Oh, definitely. Because listen, I don't think, you know, Marvel has his brand, his look, and you know they are running the market right now. The only way that you can compete with Marvel is to sell a whole different type of product. It reminds me when, you know, when wrestling in the 90s, you have the WWE, WWC, they have all the stars, they have all the money, and then the cool kid on the block, which was ECW, we don't have stars, but we have hardcore matches. And, you know, that's why they, you know, they were successful for a while. So that's,
no, for sure.
With the DC Black, you know, you can sell it as, you know, we are a little bit more mature. We're going to take some artistic risk. I mean, I'm not saying that Joker is a perfect movie and it's going to, you know, change the game forever. But a lot of people are taking
a nice start.
Exactly. And then, you know, overseas, they give him awards and, you know, they're seeing it as a serious movie instead of, oh, that's just another blockbuster. They're fun, but, you know, it's a blockbuster.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, with that being the case, Rico, it was amazing having you on the show, buddy.
Oh, thank
you. We got to do this again. And whenever it is that you have time, if it's either a movie or if you just want to talk indie comics, because right now DC is hurting me. I don't want to talk about Marvel, but I mean, whatever, man, whenever you want to talk, let's talk some comics. And with that being said, yes, you can find me at Mark Reads Comics. And Rico, where can they find you?
You can find me at Rico Reads Comics. And we'll record again when Joker 2 Rise of the Clowns comes out.
Sounds good. All right. Well, with that being said, we'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.